Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. As always, I am Katie Bateman, the content director at She Can Code. And today we are discussing how tech businesses can revamp their hiring and pay process to encourage more women into tech. Today, we're going to uncover the strategies and insights that pave the way for a more inclusive and diverse tech industry. Thankfully, I've got the wonderful Rosa Rolo, Group Strategy Director of Arrows and Major Group Company, with me today. And we're going to explore the nuances of revamping hiring and pay processes, shedding some light on how tech businesses can actively cultivate environments that attract and retain more women in tech roles. Welcome, Rosa. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for coming on and having a chat with us. I know you're a very busy lady, and we'd love to kick off with, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got into tech, please?
Yeah, of course. So I have been in the talent space for the last 15 years. I've covered contract hiring, I've covered perm. In 2019, I launched our partner offering, which was where I put talent partners on site, where we could help manage their whole talent function, which allowed us to have more impact. I've spent the last 10 years actually in the creative sector, covering digital marketing and creative, working across top ad agencies, predominantly in the D2C e-commerce space or brands that were going through that digital transformation. 2 years ago, my founding company, Major Players, merged with Arrows Group Global. Arrows have been going for 20 years. They are in the tech space, placing engineers and data teams and product across the scale-up and enterprise landscape. And we formed Major Group, of which there are five brands in the group. So Major Players and Arrows sit alongside Booster, who are our talent solutions business, Build Circle, who are a tech consultancy, who are really cool. They're set up by the founding engineering team at Just Eat. And then finally, we've got Caser, who are a search business who specialize in tech and product. So my role within the group is to bring those brands together and provide the right solution for our clients, depending on what they need. I'm also a mum of one. And the reason I tell you this is because I went off on mat leave just as the merge was happening. And I came back and suddenly was in a tech business, which was incredibly exciting, but also incredibly daunting. So I've been in the world of tech for 2 years. Which I'm loving, but I'm learning as I go. I think it's really important to share because it gives you context as to why I'm so passionate about this subject. I'm clearly Northern. I grew up in Bradford, and when I first moved to London, even my accent I found was a barrier in terms of some of the work and some of the way that people perceived me. And it got me thinking about diversity and accessibility. My mum is a wheelchair user. My little sister is gay. I have mixed heritage. And so I've always sort of noticed difference and been aware of it. And moving into the world of talent, I just realised how tricky it is, actually. And I am from such a privileged background. And if I found it tricky, how is it for other people? I'm also a relatively young female leader, which, comes with its own challenges. My exec board is made up of four men who are, I'm going to say substantially older, but they won't like that. They're older than me. And so I sit in a fairly male-dominated environment. So I'm passionate about it from my own experiences. I also think that recruitment has such an important part to play in creating a more equitable society. And moving into tech, some of the stats have been quite shocking, actually, about some of the gender differences. And I genuinely believe now there is a crucial opportunity for businesses to really change the landscape, not only of tech, but of society, because more and more technology is how society function. So that's why I'm here today, to talk to you about this stuff.
Incredible. You are a perfect example of ladies that we love to come on here and share that they fell into tech, that they unexpectedly fell into tech and that they love working in tech. I've actually never heard somebody say, I fell into tech and I really regretted it. and the, just the different routes in. That is basically why Spilling the Tea was created, to hear the different routes that ladies take into the tech sector, and that you don't have to be computer science graduate, you don't have to work in a technical role, you don't have to be a coder, that you can come into the tech industry and work in lots of different disciplines and be successful. And you're a perfect example of somebody that has done that. And it sounds as well like you're so personally invested in it as well, with your own story, which is great to hear. And I've notice that as a young female leader as well, that, you know, it's now almost a personal, it's a mission to make sure that you don't pull up the ladder behind you, and that you find other ways to encourage more women into the industry. So today's conversation is going to be a good one, because there's lots of things invested in your story that I want to touch upon. You mentioned a little bit about stats and what it basically looks like for ladies out there. Can we get started with, how would you describe the current landscape of gender diversity within the tech industry, specifically when it comes to hiring and compensation practices?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done quite a lot of work in looking into these stats and getting stats from our candidate base. So as a group, we've got about 1 million candidates on the database. So in terms of that data outreach, it's huge. And we do an annual census that looks at the state of the tech industry. And what we found is the gender split is 84% male to 11% female, which to me was shocking. I didn't actually expect it to be that high. I knew that it was male dominated, but the starkness of the contrast felt like quite shocking. Interestingly, like in terms of compensation practices, in comparison to other sectors, if, you know, thinking about the fact that I've spent the last 10 years in creative, the pay gap is less. So the pay gap we found is on average about £3,800 less than male counterparts, which is a 5% gender pay gap, which, you know, I'm sort of saying, oh, that's not that bad. You know, the UK average is 10%. But the challenge is, from my perspective, because that the pool of females that we're questioning is so low, actually is there other things going on there that's impacting that. What we've also found is, even from a contract perspective, women are earning about £25 less a day, which is still about 5%. So there's definitely some work to be done around that. The other thing that I thought was interesting when we were speaking to clients in the tech industry around how they're hiring, attracting, retaining women, is actually half of them don't have a D&I budget in place. They're not even putting their money where their mouth is in terms of investing to make change, let alone paying people correctly.
And it's still seen as a nice to have. I can't stand that phrase. Oh, it's a nice to have for us. We don't really allocate budget for it.
But it's just mad, because like there's so many studies out there, but McKinsey and company have reported that businesses that are more ethically diverse are 36% more likely to make more money. So like, morally, it's the right thing to do. Morally, I believe in equity. I believe that, you know, women should be paid fairly. Those from other minority groups should be paid fairly. But there's also the commercial aspect of it, is like, it makes sense for your business.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I've really struggled with when I'm speaking to clients. I was listening to Jen Miller, who you had on last time, and she said, you know, the fact that so many women leave a mid-level, like I was really, again, I was just really shocked at that, because I thought, okay, if you've worked so hard to get in and you have endured potentially environments that are not as inclusive as you would like, to then leave at a midway point feels so disheartening. But I also, and I think that's why I wanted to share the fact that I'm a mum at the beginning, like that juggle of having a job in a male-dominated environment and then also knowing that there's this other part of you that's going on, outside of work, it's just so disheartening that people are leaving.
And I feel like they have to leave. You're right. When Jen Miller pointed that out, and another fantastic lady that was on here, it is you almost can't believe in this day and age that ladies say that. And I've heard that a lot from ladies who felt they were worried to tell their employer that they were pregnant, or that they were wanting to start a family, and what would happen and the consequences of that. We've heard ladies that have left industries to try and find something a bit more flexible, fallen into tech because of the benefits that flexibility can offer you within tech. But lots of ladies that work in tech that have come back from maternity leave and said, you know what, I got a promotion when I came back, and why was I so worried? And when you proudly said, I'm a mum of one, you didn't say, I was going through the merger as that was happening, but you didn't say, actually, I came back and, you know, there was lots of problems with the fact that I'd become a mum. You just said, we were going through a merger. And, you know, it was just part of what was happening at that time in my life. And it was, you know, madness, but it was great. You know.
Yeah, I believe that women can have it all. It's working out what their role is and what ultimately sacrifices or boundaries you put in place to make that work. And I think the challenge with there being so little women in the sector from our data is that you really have to be confident enough to stand your ground and say, no, this is my boundary around my child. This is my boundary around, you know, my relationships. This is my boundary around my mental load, actually, that we're dealing with. That there isn't a safety in numbers in the same way that there may be in other sectors, which I think is incredibly challenging. Now, whilst I am in a male-dominated board, they all have children and they are all very respectful of the fact that I have a child and family comes first. But that's around the inclusive practices, and there's lots of little things that you can do that make women feel comfortable and more confident to put in those boundaries that a lot of businesses, I don't think, do. And a lot of them don't cost money.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I agree. They're just even having the thought is, you know, and even a group that gets together and thinks, how can we make things better? As you mentioned, a lot of those things are free. Exactly. So moving on to the hiring processes part, I wanted to tie that in with what you just said, and what can businesses actually do? Like, what can they do to modify their hiring processes to be more inclusive, to ensure that women are given equal opportunities? Because I suppose it's hiring to get the ladies in, and then also, as you said, retaining them whilst they're within the company as well. But what about just getting the ladies through the door?
Yeah. So we have always thought about what are the practical things that we can put in place that help companies attract and retain women. Often, clients will come to me and say, I want to hire diverse talent, but they're not willing to change their process in any way, which makes my job near on impossible. What we try and do is come up with really practical and actionable based things that people can put into their business. So the first one that we've mandated, and we won't work with the client if they don't do it, is something called Earn Your Worth, which is a campaign that we launched several years ago, which means we do not ask anybody, male, female, non-binary, doesn't matter what minority background they come from, we don't ask them their current salary. We ask them their skills, what they are looking for based on their skills and experience. Because what we believe happens is if you judge somebody based on what they're earning and they're already under earning, then you only offer them a small increase. And we've actually got live examples of this where we've worked with clients and we've said, this is the candidate, this is the woman that we're going to put forward. Here's all their skills and experience. They are looking for the top end of your sales, your salary bracket. The client has then hired that person and then turned around to us afterwards and said, hang on, they were earning 15 grand less. I could have got them for loads cheaper. My pushback is, yes, but you thought that their skills and experience was worth that. And what we know from lots of research is the more women feel valued in their roles, the more confident they feel, the more likely they are to stay in businesses. So the first thing is really simple. any hiring manager, any talent team, you don't ask candidates what they're earning, you ask them what they're looking for. Now, there comes some education around what is the going rate in the market. We have a salary survey. There are lots of other recruiters that have salary surveys. There's lots of things out there that you can do to benchmark your salary. Don't go in too high because the expectations on you are much higher then and you might lose the opportunity. But it's about being honest about what you think your skills and experience are worth. And then it's about the company having very clear parameters around, okay, at this experience, this is the bracket, which will create equity. The second thing that I think is really important, and I think is trickier in some roles in tech, which is skills-based hiring. And I think the challenge we have within tech is there is a lack of women that have some of the skills needed in order to do, as you said, some of the more technical roles. And that's around us encouraging more women to move into STEM subjects when they're at school and move through university. But there's also around what are the other roles within the business where we could hire based on skills, not necessarily experience. So are there people that have relevant skills from a different sector that you could move in? Again, I've spoken to clients who've said, actually, do you know what? We'll look at people from a finance background because they have the regulatory experience needed to be working in technology. But, and we can teach them the bit that they need to know about this specific sector. We believe that that would increase your talent pipeline by 10 times.
Okay. It's most of our community.
Absolutely.
So many of our ladies say, I'm moving from another sector. I don't have the experience, but I have a lot of fantastic skills, soft skills that I want to bring with me. How do I get a job? And then it's the reality bites. You actually go and try and get that job and the employer is only saying, well, actually, I need a degree in computer science and that's it. But that lady has been in work 10, 15 years and she's got brilliant skills and just knows that being in a workplace compared to the graduate. But you're absolutely right. You just summed up our entire community there.
I also think it's about businesses not working in an echo chamber. You know, you need fresh ideas. You need fresh perspectives. I think there has been the last 18 months have shown that, particularly when you look at some of the huge enterprise businesses, the Googles, the Facebooks of the world, they were working in such echo chambers that they believed their own hype and they believed that they would continue growing. And then, oh, you know, they've had to make huge sets of redundancies. Whereas if they potentially, I don't know, but if they potentially had perspectives that were not in their own echo chamber, they may have foreseen some of the things that were coming down the pipeline. So I think it's about diversity of thought as much as it is around diversity of people and gender.
Yes.
There are things like unconscious bias training, and I think this is incredibly important around making people aware of their own unconscious biases and how that may affect things. One of the questions I often ask clients is they say, I want to hire a woman. And I say, okay, great. How are you going to facilitate that woman feeling included in your all-male team? Especially now that businesses have moved more to a remote first model. And a lot of clients go, well, what do you mean? They'll just sort of fit in. But I think it's about understanding the biases that sit around just people being people. We all have them. It's something that, you know, now there are training courses out there that are super cheap. You can put lots of people through them. I have actually done a train the trainer, so I can train people to do it. You know, so it's a really simple thing, but it actually has huge impact in the inclusivity. And I think, you know, as we've touched on, one of the challenges is not just getting them in, but keeping them.
Yeah. How they feel every day as well when they're at work. You're right. I'm pleased you mentioned unconscious bias because I wanted to touch upon it and how, you know, companies can identify and eliminate that. And you just mentioned it there with, you know, sending people on courses and just pointing out to people that in case you hadn't noticed, you know, these things are here, because you're right. People, if it is an all-male team, they might not notice how they are affecting that lady. It doesn't mean to say that those men are doing something necessarily wrong and what they're doing is vindictive in any way. Yeah. It's just they haven't noticed. I had a lady on here last week and she said, She'd been in work 30 years and she was saying, you know, back in the day, I used to just go along with things that were happening. And she said things like, I tried to do things to fit in because people didn't realize that I was having to do things as a woman that I didn't want to do. She said, I had to learn to play golf because I wanted to go along to the events. Yeah. And all the events were men playing golf. And she said, I had to force myself to learn. But, you know, if somebody had just said, actually, hey, the ladies on this team might not be up for that, or can we try something new? Then, you know, it's just making sure that people are aware of how other people are feeling. And she said, now looking back, she wishes that she'd just, you know, said, actually, yeah, I'll be in the spa if you need me, not on the golf course.
And I guess it's all of the things that unconscious bias can lead to not being said as well. And what I'm more meaning is, you know, people don't ask questions about how women manage their children if they have them, because they're terrified of getting it wrong, or, you know, so they either might make an assumption, or this person's definitely going to need flexible working, part-time hours, like it's a negative thing. Or they don't say, how do you manage your life? You know, they're not asking pertinent questions because they're terrified of getting it wrong. And actually, from my experience of working with you know, more diverse sets of people, just people, in my opinion, you know, they're not diverse, they're just different. It's about leaning into asking some of the questions and saying, and how does that work for you? And how do you manage that? And what else do you need? And how can I make it easier for you? But if you're not aware of the biases in the first place, you know, if it doesn't come up for you in your life, you might not be aware to ask it about other people. So it's something that is so simple, but has such a huge effect on, and not only the people that you're trying to attract, but also the people that are already in your business, because yeah, there is, you know, there's so much diversity of thought that is impacted by how you're asking the questions with the people that you work with. There are just two other things. I mean, the first thing is around inclusive job descriptions and really tweaking some of the language. There's a lot of studies around the fact that if you use more quote unquote aggressive language, then you are more likely to attract men versus something, you know, arguably more sort of friendly language. And I think that sometimes can go a long way in getting people to apply. The main thing for me, the thing that I am so, so passionate about, is transparent salary bandings. That is the thing for me, that if the businesses that adopt a really transparent model about how they pay their staff and how they move people through the salary bandings is going to be the way that I think people will attract women and diverse talent. Only 16% of UK businesses disclosed all of their pay packages to their workforce last year. It's just been made a law in the EU that it's going to be something that's mandated more and more. So I think it is going to come up more and more with businesses. And I just think that so much of the diversity and inclusion actually comes from a place of equity, comes from women feeling like they belong there. And if they can see, okay, this is what people earn in my business and I am equal with them, or I am aspiring to be them, but I can see the gap about where I'm trying to get to, that's for me the game changer.
Definitely. Yes, because I wanted to touch upon what organizations can do in regards to that pay gap. You're right, it's not just getting people in, it's retaining them as well. I remember going for a job and I put forward what I was hoping for a salary, and I got the job. And then there was this feeling throughout that whole job that actually I had gone in too low. And it was like this undercurrent that kind of other people knew that my predecessor was paid a lot more than me.
Yeah.
And it was just that feeling that stayed with me. And I thought, I just didn't get off on a good foot. And you know, and then you take that with you in every day, because they weren't transparent about, you know, what the person before earned and what they think that, you know, you match those skills and you've gone right into the same role. But because I said what I was hoping for, they just thought, lovely, we saved a lot of money there.
And it's the you know, when people talk about value, yes, there is the monetary value of the amount that you are paid, But intrinsically, a lot of people link that value to the value that they have in the role that they do. And if they have an inkling that they are underpaid, that they're not being paid fairly, or that other people around them are being paid more than them without the clarity as to why, you know, there should be clear salary bandings. And I want to be surrounded by people that earn more money than me, because it means that they're better than me and I can learn from them. And that is inspiring. And I'm really clear about how I'm going to increase my value, not only in terms of salary, but in terms of my skill set, because it's clear and it's there for you. It's when it sort of whispers. And I think that's, you know, one of the themes as we're talking that seems to be coming out is, like, if you're not transparent about how you're doing things and the processes that you have in place, it creates elements of doubt. And ultimately, because women are so sought after, because we're brilliant, we'll leave.
Exactly. And you're right, it is those careless whispers. And when somebody spots something that goes out on LinkedIn with an accidental salary band, I've seen that as well, where people go, hang on a minute, you know, because the company hasn't been transparent, and you think, well, that's not fair, or why is it that it's a new person that would get more than me, whereas I've been here, you know, X amount of years, and it makes that person feel like, well, I'm going to dust off my CV now and come find somewhere else. You know, even if after a few weeks, I think they notice and they think, oh gosh, somebody put out a salary band, you know, the damage is already done.
Yeah. And the trust. You know, one of the things that I've seen over the last couple of years, and the impact of the pandemic and then, you know, the post-COVID boom and everybody hiring, is there is a lack of trust with people, with their employers. And because COVID was so, you know, traumatizing for so many people, people look to their employer to look after them. And those clients that broke that trust, that is really, really hard to get back. And I think it has huge impacts on who decides to stay.
Yes. And when you have those conversations with people that say, you know, I've been at this company for 10 years, 20 years, and you look into why they're staying at that company. One of our partners recently told me, I was talking to a couple of ladies that work at that partner, and they said, a lot of people here, they don't want to leave. They approach their managers or their management team and ask what other opportunities are there, whether they're in that department, even in a different department. But nobody has that feeling that they want to leave that company. And there's something special about a culture like that, where they can retain their people, even if that person thinks, I want a new challenge and I want to try something new, but I don't want to leave this company, which is quite rare, as you said, after the pandemic.
Yeah. I think it's funny. It's one of the things that my chairman, Jack, who's a man, taught me at a young age. I just turned 30 when I was promoted to the board. And he taught me about a business theory called Queen Bee syndrome, which is when women get to the top. And as you said, they pull the ladder up. They're terrified about being found out. Yep. And so they kill all of the other women around them. And if you can find businesses that cultivate a culture that celebrates diversity, celebrates people wanting different things at different times in their life, and cultivates that trust, then the queen bee syndrome disappears. And actually, people then celebrate other people. Yeah, I think that's so important, that's when people really get to keep people. But that comes with, like, as we said, all of the little things along the way.
Yeah, it's not by magic overnight. No. You are right. It's all of those tiny things that make that company's culture, rather than just I think a lot of companies think you just flick a switch and one day you're diverse and everybody, you know, works together for a great company culture. But it takes a very long time and a lot of effort. Is there anything outside of, you know, approaches to compensation that basically go beyond salary, you know, kind of like flexible working arrangements or other benefits that can help to attract and retain diverse talents?
Yeah, I think what we've certainly seen, again, over the last 18 months, this switch from people being remote to then these mandated days in the office, is that it's really limited, particularly those that are either in like roles of mothers or those that are carers, in terms of where they can go next, because there's these blanket rules that, no, we need you in 3 days a week, 9 to 6. And that just doesn't work with most women's and, you know, most parents, I think the difference is, as we touched on a couple of times, because there is such a smaller pool of women in the industry, there is less confidence to be able to say, I'm really sorry, I just need to leave at 5 and I'll log back on at 6:30, but I've got to pick up my child. So I think flexibility is really important. The other things that I think are hugely beneficial are things around like parental packages, so maternity, paternity leave. One of our stats is that only a quarter of mothers took their full maternity allowance because of the cost of living crisis. And I think that's something that's really prevalent at the moment. And that sort of, I didn't mean for it to come up, but I mean, that trust in women that they're going to go off and have babies and take some time to develop their family, and then they're going to come back. The most hireable person is a woman with 2 children. You know the phrase, yes. Give a busy person things to do. And I think sometimes it's so short-sighted of businesses to say, oh no, we can't afford that package, when actually the cost of losing that person and rehiring has such huge implications on their business.
And ladies as well, before they become parents that are of a certain age, because I've heard teams before say, even joke, you know, you don't want to stay here for long because this isn't the place to start a family. Or is it, it's in their mind that they're thinking, absolutely, well, you know what, the package here is rubbish. So if I were to start a family in the next few years, I'm going to have to look elsewhere and don't accidentally fall pregnant at this company because I've had it. You know, so it's almost like a joke amongst the team that you need to go before you think about that.
But it's a very, very real challenge for women that anybody who is deciding to embark upon a family has to navigate a, in my opinion, very antiquated system around having a child and having a career at the same time, because of the classic packages that are in place. Also, you know, I think it's not just thinking about how do you cope whilst you're on maternity leave, but the impact of coming back to work, you know,
yeah.
The cost of childcare in the UK, particularly in London, is horrendous. You know, it's the same amount as my mortgage monthly. And there is a real challenge for women about how do they return and how are they compensated in their return as well. And I think those women that are not earning over a certain amount really struggle, because it just doesn't make sense. And lots of women end up returning and working for free because the cost of childcare is so expensive that actually they begin to realize that that's not the right thing. So I think flexibility and looking at those maternity, paternity packages are really important. We looked at some of the information from the census from last year, and some of the most desired benefits were things like holiday allowance. And again, I think flexibility for women around having time for themselves. And this doesn't have to be a parent thing. I think this is a woman thing, is around like creating space for themselves to go. And some of that is just about annual leave and having the right amount of time off. And learning and development, 74% of people said that L&D is really important. I think making sure that not only you attract women and you retain them, but you develop them, is really important as well. And a lot of people I see move because they're not given the right opportunities within their businesses. So they go, do you know what? I have to move to be developed further.
Yeah.
And bonus and pension is a big one. I think money is high up the list at the moment because of the cost of living crisis. Lots of people are thinking about how do we just afford it all.
Yes, and incentivize other people in other ways. You're absolutely right. In terms of if you're a great company and you're giving a lot of those things, and you're thinking, you know what, I'm trying to change my company culture, how can you then track your progress and how well that is going? You know, so you can make data-driven decisions basically, I mean, you mentioned the McKinsey survey earlier, and the company suddenly realizing that diversity affects your bottom line, and that it's good for that. How can organizations do that themselves and just track and measure the things are working for us or not sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this and I wrote down when I was thinking about it, count your people, work out what the difference is, set a goal and start working towards it. Like, I wanted to come up with some sort of really intelligent, you know, response, but it's quite simple. I think it is around looking at the diversity makeup of your business in the first place and doing an audit. And I truly believe that it's not just about gender, but I think that's important as in a first instance. Yeah. Looking at what's the diversity makeup of your business, and then what do you want to get to, and setting goals within it. So that's the first thing, is just really managing the workforce that you have. The second thing that I think you can do is look at your org matrix of roles that you have and think about what are the roles that you could either flex on experience. So if a lead engineer leaves, do you need to replace with a like-for-like lead engineer? Could you look at a senior engineer stepping up? And therefore, does it widen the pool of candidates that you can look at and enable you to hire a woman? Or are there other roles within the organization that you could look at that skills-based transferable experience? So being really methodical, actually, with this is where we are, this is where we want to get to, and these are the places where we can have maximum impact. The other thing that I just think is so important is it needs to be from the board down.
Yes,
it definitely has to be mandated from a board objective. The minute it sits, unfortunately, with a people team or a HR team, or it's sort of, you know, given to heads of departments to be responsible for, but it doesn't sit with the board, then it won't work, because sometimes you are going to have to wait to make hires. Sometimes you are going to have to spend more money to get the right people. And not just in terms of spending more money to attract the right person in the first place, but spending more money to invest in training people to get the right people in. So it has to come from a top down.
You know what I was going to say, is there any actionable advice that you would give to tech companies looking to embark on their journey for gender diversity and inclusion? But actually, you've just nailed it with that. It has to come from the board, and that is the place to start. And you're absolutely right, because I think sometimes, especially when you work in tech diversity a lot, you see a lot of companies that are just ticking a box. Yeah. And they think, we've thrown some money at something, or we've put somebody's logo on something, and that's it. You know, we've kind of done our bit. But actually, when you look within that company itself and you start from the board, that's not where that tiny bit of budget come from. You know, normally it comes from their talent division, for instance, and it's this little piece of budget that has been given to try and shoehorn a couple of women into the business, and it's never going to work because it doesn't actually filter through to their own company culture. People can see that. You can easily see that, even from your first interview with somebody. And I think people, especially now, they're just more aware of, you know, a company's culture, and it's more important to them than just salary. Salary is important, but it's far more important to know that you're interviewing with a company that seems authentic and that you're going to get on there. And as you said, especially ladies with children, they don't want to keep moving around. They want to get in that job and they want to stay, and they're that loyal employee. I think a lot of those ladies can see through, you know, their interviewer.
You said, you know, the thing is funny because you just talked about being authentic, and that's the thing that I have written down is authenticity. And like that board, if they're an all male board, owning their reasoning, you know, it can be a very commercial reasoning. We know that investors now are instigating and saying your board has to be diverse. We need diversity of thought. We know that there is more and more pressure on businesses to deliver diverse workforces. It can be a very commercial reason why you are doing it. It can also be a moral reason that actually they have a daughter that they want to work in tech, or they have a sister that could have been amazing in tech but didn't feel like they were, you know, able to be there. So that authenticity piece of really owning it. And then learning and educating yourself. One of the things that I want to do this year is run a reverse mentoring scheme, which is where I get senior men in the tech industry to be mentored by junior women. Because as I said, I think a lot of the time men are scared to ask the questions to actually understand what would create an inclusive environment. And actually they need to be taught by young women who say, by the way, I have a period once a month and it's awful.
Yeah.
And just so you know, this is how you've got to manage me for that week, rather than it being something that's sort of, I think there is a genuine fear that men don't know what they're doing and therefore and are not asking.
Yeah. Or they're dragged into a room to be told off.
Yeah,
that they haven't been doing something. And you think,
and
it's
ultimately
not from there.
It's investment, and some of it, and it doesn't have to be money, it can be time. And I think that's the other thing that's really important.
Yeah. I have loved everything that you said today, and I'm so pleased that you decided to come on here as a guest and share your thoughts. So, Rosa, we are already out of time, though. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And to everybody listening, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you again next time.